relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream today. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Thanks for
this
joining us.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka, and I'm very proud to introduce our guest host for today, Jennifer Horn.
How dare I step on the great Dr. G. Dr. Sebastian Gorka does usually host America First. You listen to him every single day right here, but he is out today. Jennifer Horn in, and happy to be with you. If you haven't heard me here before, you can usually find me on America First Wednesdays doing the California Crazy Report. I also host The Morning Answer on Salem Radio in Los Angeles, which is AM 870 The Answer, AM 590 The Answer, and The Jen and Don Show on AM 590 The Answer in the Inland Empire. So it is nice to be back. Nice to be in for Dr. G, who's taken some time off today. And usually on these holiday weeks, it is a slow time. But oh no, check your watches, check your calendars. We are down to 1 week away from the Georgia Senate runoff election. Now, this has been something that people have been paying attention for literally since Election Day. People have been watching and waiting and looking for trends that might be applicable in Georgia. You have Kelly Loeffler, who is the incumbent senator who was appointed by the governor, who is up for reelection against Raphael Warnock. Then you've got Senator David Perdue, who is also the incumbent senator who is up for reelection, running against John Ossoff, who until this point has been pretty much a career politician. And with 1 week out, you've got a lot of people saying a lot of things on cable news. You've got Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, who's saying, according to reports, that he's nervous about the prospect of at least, well, both of these Democrats winning the race. Remember, right now, the balance of power in the Senate depends on the outcome of the Senate runoff elections. Now, Republicans only need to win one seat. Democrats have to win two to get the majority. And that would mean that Kamala Harris would come in if she is indeed sworn in as vice president on January the 20th. If she would, she'd be the person who would break the tie, basically, between Democrats and Republicans, giving Democrats the majority. Republicans only need to win one seat to solidify their majority in the Senate. And you've got a lot of people. So Chuck Schumer saying that he is nervous about the outcome to sources within his camp. You also have pollsters like Frank Luntz, who are out there saying that President Trump is actually ruining things for Republicans. Remember, Frank Luntz is a pollster who has kind of consistently gotten it wrong, yet somehow still manages to defend the polling industry. He was out on Fox News talking about the Senate race, saying that President Trump is actually ruining things for Republicans. This is video cut number 9.
It feels like this president's trying to do as much damage as he can, not just to Mitch McConnell, but the Republicans in the House and in the Senate. And the press is glad to go along because it'll help in that final race of 2020 in Georgia. And I'm afraid, and I believe, that those two Republicans may well lose on the 5th of January because of what the president is doing right now. The media is helping him, and this should not be happening.
Don't you love this? Here we are, a week out from the election, and pollsters and talking heads like Frank Luntz say that it is President Trump's doing that Republicans may suffer in the Georgia runoffs. First of all, last time I checked, what President Trump was doing, to bring this criticism from Frank Luntz, was questioning this ridiculously huge omnibus spending bill, $1.4 trillion deep. Also questioning why so much money is going into the COVID relief bill. Some say stimulus. I say stimulus bill. Well, and then you're only giving $600 to American people who have been suffering for months and months and months of government shutdowns. What I think President Trump is doing is actually good for the Republicans, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue in Georgia. He's actually standing up and fighting for the good of the American people, not just for a party. And I think that means something to not only those who are going to be voting in Georgia, but to all Americans who are looking for some politicians with integrity, who are looking for people to stand up after they get elected and actually do something for the people that they serve. I think Frank Luntz is totally missing the mark. And if you listen to him, he didn't once talk about the Democrat candidates. He never once talked about John Ossoff, never once talked about Raphael Warnock. Instead, what we get from Frank Luntz is, quite frankly, pretty boring these days, and that is more the same. If they lose, it must be Trump's fault. That is always the narrative that is being pushed out there from the mainstream news media. 833-33-GORKA is the number to call. 833-33-GORKA. You can join me throughout the show. Here's why Frank Luntz is missing the mark. He should be spending some time talking about these Democrats who are running for office. If you've missed it, and it's easy. We've all been celebrating the holidays. We've been doing our shopping, getting ready to forget 2020. Raphael Warnock was exposed a few weeks ago on Tucker Carlson's show, a video of his wife accusing him of domestic abuse, including running over her foot with a car, made its way to the forefront on Tucker Carlson's show. Now, if that wasn't enough, then he is now this week taking another blow to his campaign in the form of allegations of abuse via the church camp that he used to run. Now, these are coming from the testimony of a man named Anthony Washington. If you haven't heard about this, pretty stunning claims. And listen to what he says happened to him. He says when he was 12 years old, he says that this summer camp, this church camp that he went to that was overseen by Reverend Warnock, counselors tossed urine on him and locked him outside his cabin overnight. Now, these claims are so disturbing that Kelly Loeffler is running against him, said this is enough to disqualify him. But he said that and this story, by the way, running right now in the Washington Free Beacon, you can find it there. He's now 30 years old. He goes back to when he was 12. He recounted the events in this interview with the Washington Free Beacon, and he said his experience at the camp resulted in a lawsuit that ended 2 years later when he says he and his family received a large financial settlement. His accounts of the events provide the first direct insight into the alleged abuse and neglect that transpired at Camp Farthest Out, which Warnock oversaw as senior pastor at Maryland's Douglas Memorial Community Church, and of course, raises questions about his history. Now, sometimes life brings things up, right? We all know that stuff happens in life. But when you have a candidate who is presumably the best candidate that the Democratic Party can find in the state of Georgia, when you find that this could be the guy the one to take on Kelly Loeffler, the one to take on Republicans to gain the majority for Democrats, is their best candidate a guy who may have a history of a domestic abuse, a guy who has on the record said that he supported Jeremiah Wright and all of the atrocities, all of the spew, the hate-filled spew that came out of his mouth. He has on the record supported him. And now we're finding out and hearing more and more about this story out of this camp, this church camp that Raphael Warnock oversaw, where all kinds of allegations are coming out, including one that says this poor 12-year-old kid had urine splashed on him and he was left outside in the cold. He said that routinely campers were left outside, that staffers were not subject to criminal background checks, which probably should be a basic. And there were at least 5 cases of child abuse or neglect that were brought against the camp's director, who was ultimately forced to resign. Now, does he bear no responsibility for that? Because it sure seems like this would be something that maybe Frank Luntz might be talking about. The pollsters like Frank Luntz, the talking heads that are saying that President Trump, for standing up for Americans, that he's doing something to harm Republicans' chances in Georgia. Instead, maybe we should be looking at the candidates that the Democrats are running. Are they acceptable to you? Are they acceptable to Georgia? And are they an acceptable choice to define the balance of power in the Senate? 833-33-GORKA is the number to call. Take your calls on this. Plus, the New York Times in the hot seat once again. Are they journalists or activists? We'll explore that with Robbie Suave. He joins us. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. This is America First.
I'm Sebastian Gorka on America First. Let's get back to the show with Jennifer Horn.
Thank you, Dr. G. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. You have found us, America First. Happy New Year to you and yours from all of us here at the program. Don't forget, you can follow Seb at Seb Gorka, and you can check out information about the show. SebGorka.com is a place if you want. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Jennifer Horn. Now, not sure if you saw this over the weekend, but the New York Times did a piece, a story, about a biracial teenager who said he has no regrets for holding on to an old video of one of his high school classmates using a racial slur. He decided to hold on to that video until he could make it count when it would do the most damage. He released it this summer, and she has pretty much lost everything. She's now in college, lost her admission there. And the New York Times publishing this, almost celebrating it like a life lesson taught. Joining us right now is Robbie Suave. He is the senior editor at Reason. Check them out. Reason.com is a place, and you can follow him on Twitter at Robbie Suave. Robbie, thanks for joining us on America First.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's great to hear your voice again. And take us through this story. For people who haven't heard about it, take us through the story of Jimmy Galligan and what he saw from Mimi Groves that upset him so much.
Sure. So this young woman, when she was 15, several years ago, there was a 3-second video of her that got posted to Snapchat, which is one of the apps kids use, where the video is supposed to go away, but the kids know all sorts of ways to save the videos and come back and get each other in trouble later.
Yep.
And she uses a racial slur in the video, not directed at anyone specifically, but obviously she shouldn't have said it, and that was a huge mistake. But this classmate, Jimmy Galligan, he gets the video and he saves it for a long time, waits till after she announced, years later after the video, that she's been accepted to, I think, the University of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And then he releases it. And of course, you know, there's a social media storm against her, everyone calling her racist. She gets de-admitted. She gets kicked off the cheerleading team, you know, all the kind of life derailing cancel culture stuff. And now, so that happened months ago. Now the New York Times decided to do a story about it, where it names both teenagers, has pictures of them, And, you know, you go read the story, judge for yourself. But it really, to me, looks like it's on the side of Galligan, lionizing him, portraying him as this kind of, you know, person who got justice for aggrieved people of color.
Yeah, Robbie, it seems to me they're glorifying cancel culture instead of, if this movement is honest and sincere about making the country and Americans less racist, whatever the movement is saying they'd like to do, to me, this is so anti the movement. Because if you know the story of Mimi Groves, you know she made the slur. She apologized for it. She had another girl, an African-American girl, who had come to her defense on a lot of the social media platforms. And she had started going out there and advocating for Black Lives Matter during the summer when all of the protests were going on to protest the treatment of George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd. So this girl, whatever she had said in the past, has actually now she's come full circle. If we are using the cancel culture movement to try to teach lessons, well, this girl seems to have already learned the lesson. But the New York Times goes on and kind of puts on a pedestal this kid, Jimmy Galligan, saying, look what this guy did. It's no longer about teaching. It's about the gotcha. It's about ending people and not about teachable moments here.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the problem with this whole thing, especially cancel culture, especially applied to kids and to teenagers, because they do things that are wrong and are bad and are stupid, for which they deserve an appropriate level of criticism or maybe punishment. And then they're supposed to, then they learn from that that they were wrong, and they grow and move past that, and it's forgiven. That's how it's supposed to work. That's how it worked for me when I was a kid, and you and everyone else who grew up before social media and smartphones made it so that every mistake you've made, everything you say is recorded. There's video of it, and it's just sitting out there waiting to come back and bite you when you're about to get ahead in life. And I think that's a terrible, terrible thing. It's that the younger generation, that our kids have to grow up like that. To adjust, we need to become more forgiving of a society, frankly, more willing to just say, you know what, if you were before you're 16 or 17 or whatever, unless it's a crime, unless it's like very violent, major disciplinary issue, I don't want to hear about it. It's forgiven. It's certainly, I don't want to hear about it in the pages of the New York Times. Like, why are they covering misbehavior by kids?
Well, and that's just it. If they're not carrying a vendetta, and I think this is where the cancel culture has just run amok, because originally, if you thought the cancel culture was something to celebrate, you thought, okay, we're teaching people to be better human beings. But this person is a child, number one, had already kind of learned the lesson. I don't think anybody's condoning the language that she used, but she went on. She was a kid. She did something stupid. She went on. She might have even, you know, really learned from that mistake and changed her social opinions because of it. Yet the New York Times still finds it appropriate to go after a child. And it wasn't just the New York Times. It was also the University of Tennessee. Now, this girl, yep, Mimi Groves, worked her whole life to become a cheerleader at the level of the University of Tennessee. They're like top competitors or champions in cheer. And so she went on. She finds her way onto this squad, and she loses that after working so hard. She's now going to be going to community college because they effectively canceled her because of this piece in the New York Times and all the stuff on social media.
Yeah, and I think that was a horrible thing for them to do, and I'm glad they're being criticized here. Because, you know, people keep saying to me, like, you know, people who are sympathetic now to the girl are saying that the guy who did this to her, Jimmy Galley, you know, he's a sociopath, he's a monster. And I'm actually, I want to step back and say, you know what, I think that's a really bad thing that he did to her. But teenagers actually do really bad things to each other. They're mean. They're nasty. I remember high school. Maybe too many people have forgotten.
Nope, it was awful.
People are cruel to each other. No, it was. And people can be the victims of cruelty and then cruel to other people at the same time. But it's like not a dichotomy between bullies and the bullied. Everyone is the bully some days and the bullied the next.
Yeah.
So that's the reality of the way it is. So I'm not going to call him like a monster for this, because again, he was a teen when he did this. It's the adults that are sanctioning it, that are celebrating it, that are discussing it in this broader context that I'm so disgusted with.
Absolutely. We talked about that off the air. It's like these kids, they're being ding-dong teenagers. They're being mean to each other. In some ways, they're probably being a little hateful to each other. But when you have the New York Times, that is supposed to be the newspaper of record, deciding that they are no longer interested in journalism and only interested in activism, which they're giving us a lot of clues that that's the path that they have been and will continue to head in, that's a problem. And then when you look at the University of Tennessee that's willing to cancel a kid's dreams because of this, pretty unbelievable stuff. Robbie Suave, thank you so much for being with us. Follow him right now at Robbie Suave, S-O-A-V-E, and also check out Reason, where he is the senior editor. Reason.com is the place to go for more information. You can see his story on the New York Times. They're front and center in the headlines. But Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. We have a lot more up ahead. This is America First.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is marking its season of hope, and they need your help. The foundation is honoring America's heroes by donating 36 homes in 36 days. That's one home a day from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve. Tunnel to Towers is gifting homes in more than two dozen states across our nation. They're bringing hope to great Americans, our catastrophically injured veterans, Gold Star, and fallen first responder families. The foundation is giving thanks to all of those who have sacrificed so much for us, and to the many people like you across this country who have supported their efforts to honor our nation's heroes. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Donate $11 a month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. T2T.org. Help bring hope to America's heroes and their families. Thank you.
Few ingredients. We have tomatoes. We have cucumbers.
How you say cucumber? We're going to talk about that in just a few moments. Welcome back. It is America First. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. G. Seb Gorka out today. You can always follow him on Twitter at Seb Gorka and check out SebGorka.com. Never miss a moment. The show continues. Plus, we stream. You can find us right now on YouTube. Just join Seb Gorka's channel right there. And you can call us. We've got the old-fashioned phone lines as well. 833-33-GORKA is the number to join us in conversation on anything we're talking about today. 833-33-GORKA. Okay, what you heard, there was a clip of the Today Show. Those of you in the YouTube chat, you got to see Ilaria Baldwin, who is Alec Baldwin's wife. Now, just to refresh and set the stage, Alec Baldwin, an actor, a very loud critic of President Trump and Republicans in general, also found himself impersonating the president on Saturday Night Live for the last couple of years. He's also the guy that has had a few run-ins with the news media. Can't fault him for that. He has threatened them, called them some names. He, infamously left a message for his daughter and called her a liar and a little pig when she was just 11 years old. So make your own judgments on Alec Baldwin, but those are the facts. He also got married not too long ago, remarried to a woman named Ilaria, spelled Hilaria, but pronounced Ilaria. Now, Ilaria was allegedly born in Spain. At least that's what she told everybody. And there is a brouhaha that has found its way to not only the cover of the New York Post, it's the top of page 6, and it has made its way to cable news today. And that is that Ilaria may actually be Hillary from Boston. Here's how the story goes. The actress Amy Schumer on Instagram made a comment about Ilaria Baldwin and made a comment about basically her body, because she is very fit. She does a lot of yoga. She's actually a yoga instructor. I think that's one of the things that she does. She's had five kids. And look. She looks absolutely amazing. Amy Schumer, who is not as blessed genetically, has had a kid, and she's struggling, like a lot of women do, to get back into shape. And so she makes a comment to Ilaria Baldwin just saying, oh, you know, you look so beautiful. And I don't know, Ilaria took it the wrong way. And so she shot back on Instagram. And when she shot back on Instagram, her video sounded a less like Spanish Ilaria and more like Hillary from Boston. That accent was out there. So people started doing a little investigating. And what they found is that Ilaria Baldwin is actually Hillary and came from Boston, where she was born. Her parents had her there. They would travel back and forth to Spain a lot. But she put on being from Spain, being Hispanic. In fact, she celebrated it. She made a name for herself in that cooking segment that you heard where she said she didn't know how to pronounce the English word cucumber. I'm pretty sure they know how to pronounce cucumber in the city of Boston. But Ilaria having a little trouble with it on the Today Show. All now blowing up around the Baldwin family. And the question is, did Alec know that she was putting this on or not? I mean, he had a lot of commentary for the president. He had a lot of negative things to say about Republicans. He had a lot of, well, he had a lot to say about everybody. But now his wife is being called out. Now, some gossip sites are saying that she actually came up with this alternate persona because she had heard that Alec Baldwin, when he was working on the set of Third Rock, was actually trying to court Selma Hayek. And apparently she didn't take too kindly to that. She wasn't interested. And so word got around that he was denied by Selma Hayek. And so Ilaria, who worked at this restaurant, saw Alec Baldwin dining there, thought she needed this more exotic persona to try to attract his attention. And attract it she did. She not only married him, but they have like 5 children together. And so my question is this. If, forget about what she did and what she said she was and obviously wasn't. But if you have a Hollywood culture that is busy telling Americans and young Americans, especially, that the country's racist, why in the world would Hillary from Boston want to put on a Spanish accent and say she's from Spain? If the country's so racist, why would she want to do that? Wouldn't she want to say she's from Boston if people can't tolerate Hispanics and people from Spain? I think she was caught. I think Hollywood was caught. She may have egg on her face, but all of Hollywood does as well. And that is because racism was really that bad. Why is she pretending not to be able to say cucumber? And obviously, she is succeeding here. All right. We'll take your phone calls on Alec Baldwin, the egg on the face on Hillary from Boston, 833-33-GORKA, and President Trump getting a big honor. All as we continue. Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka. This is America First.
I'm Sebastian Gorka on America First. Let's get back to the show with Jennifer Horn.
Thank you, Dr. G. It is Jennifer Horn in for Seb Gorka. This is America First. And, you know, most of us probably pretty happy to see 2020 come to an end with the coronavirus pandemic and civil unrest in our cities and the election madness. Well, this has been one year we will all be happy to see in our rearview mirrors. But before 2020 ends at midnight this Thursday, Seb asked me to remind you that there's still time to score a great year-end tax deduction and at the same time help to bring positive change to the lives of boys and girls who, through no fault of their own, have a mom or dad in prison. Now, that makes them more likely to end up in sketchy neighborhoods, near gangs, drugs, and other dangers. But that's where our friends at Prison Fellowship work real miracles. Whether it's through our just completed Angel Tree Christmas campaign or the Angel Tree Sports Clinic or the awesome Angel Tree Summer Camps, a donation from you in any amount from you can literally change the life of an at-risk kid. Now, there are a lot of kids who need your help this time of year. And when you go to SebGorka.com and click on the Angel Tree banner, you'll also receive that year-end tax deduction that I told you about. So it's a win for you, a win for them. But it is getting late and there is still time between between now and December 31st, this Thursday, to help the ongoing year-round work of Prison Fellowship and score a solid year-end tax deduction for any amount you donate at sebgorka.com. Or you can use the phone. Phone and call in your gift at 888-206-2794. That's 888-206-2794. So before you forget, please go right now. sebgorka.com is the place. Click on the Angel Tree banner. Thank you always for being so generous. You were last week. I know you will be it. Do it again and get that year and tax deduction in addition. SebGorka.com for more information. All right, let's talk about the Republican Party. In the year 2020, as it is coming to an end, many of us are looking back at the year that was, but I always want to look forward. I want to know about what's going to happen. And certainly the election in Georgia is one place where we will look to see what trends are ahead for us in our political future. We will also, of course, no more next week about whether President Trump's challenge to the outcome of the 2020 election will come true. We will know soon enough who will be sworn into office on January 20th, whether that is Joe Biden or President Trump. But there's a new survey that's out from Rasmussen right now that asked Republican voters who they would like to see as the model for the GOP moving forward. So join me right now on the phones, 833-33-GORKA, and chime in. What model should the Republican Party take here on out? A large majority, I will tell you, in this survey think that Republican voters want the party to be more like President Trump than the average GOP member of Congress. That's according to the Rasmussen poll I'm telling you about. 24% of GOP voters see the average congressional Republican as a better model for the party than Trump, while 72% say the GOP should be more like outgoing President Trump, or perhaps maybe sticking around President Trump. According to the poll, a slight majority, 52%, would like a new Republican on the 2024 presidential ticket. 63% among Democrats and independent voters say that they would like to see a fresh face. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing to look at because the Republican Party is not necessarily cracking in my mind, but it is at a crossroads. We have to do some blending. We have to figure out how we can still be fiscally conservative Republicans, but still maintain a sense of populism to truly get help to American workers and American taxpayers. Because in the past, it seems that we haven't been able to do those two things all at the same time. And I think Democrats, as much as their party is fractured, and you do have more moderates and the socialist branch of the party, there is a fracture there and maybe even a potential for a third party. But for Republicans, we have to figure out what our party looks like. And I don't think it's fissured. I don't think that there is a huge gap of separation between your congressional Republicans and the Trump model. But I think what we see in our newly elected officials, the ones that have actually made some progress this year, the ones who got elected for the first time, a lot of women here in California that were elected for the first time, some congressional candidates that maybe look a little different than the Republican Party of the past. That's the blend. They've found that blend with Trumpism and traditional GOP fiscally conservative values. So in my mind, I think this poll is right on the money. We need to adopt what President Trump has taught us as a party, and we need to marry that with some fiscal conservatism and move forward into 2021 and beyond. What do you think? 833-33-GORKA. This new poll says that 72% of would-be Republican voters say that Trump is and should be the model for the Republican Party. Let's go quickly to Patrick. Actually, we'll come back to you, Patrick, on California, basically, and the Trump model, because I think that it's important to note that there are some choices ahead for Republicans, right? We have to decide if we are going to stick completely with populism or if we are going to marry in that traditional Mitch McConnell style Republican. We do have some time. Patrick on line five in California. Hi, Patrick. You're on America First.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I have to agree with you. I think there's a reason 74 million people came out to vote, if not more, strictly for Donald Trump. And I think it would be folly for us to think as Republicans or conservatives that it was it was anything but how he spoke, his brand, his fight back kind of attitude. And I personally am tired of the complacent kind of turn the other cheek I guess you could say, type of Republicanism and what Trump had to offer really inspired me and inspired, obviously, record voter turnout on one side anyways. But, yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, Patrick, thank you very much for the phone call. I think you are so right on the money with this because, and again, I think there are a lot of traditional conservatives who may disagree. I think those never Trumpers that were around 4 years ago that say Trump style was just too much. Trump style actually saved the Republican Party. And I think it is resonating with most Republican voters right now that we can't let that go. No matter what happens, whether or not President Trump is sworn into office on January 20th or not, we can never lose the backbone that President Trump has instilled in the Republican Party, this ability for us to push back and to not fall victim to identity politics, which is what we were getting murdered with by Democrats. So what do you think? Does the GOP need to adopt more of a Trump model moving forward into 2021? Or do we need to go back to the old style? 833-33-GORKA is the number to call. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Welcome back. This is America First. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. G. Dr. Sebastian Gorka out today, but you can follow him. He is tweeting away at Seb Gorka. You can check out the website, sebgorka.com. And hey, you can even follow me on Twitter as well, at Jennifer Horn. And we're on Parler, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you do social media, you will find Seb, you'll find me, and you'll find America First. So make sure you check us all out. All right, a new survey that's out from Rasmussen says that 72% of Republican voters say that they want to see more Trump as the model for the GOP moving forward. So let's take off the outcome of this election for a while. There's still a lot outstanding. We don't know what is going to happen on January the 20th. And believe me, if 2020 is any indication, anything can happen. So let's push that to the side. But moving forward, what do you want to see the Republican Party look like? Republicans, by and large, are saying it's 72% deep that they want to see President Trump's model of the Republican Party adopted for the long term. Get this, however, among Democrat likely voters, 62%, the majority, say that the GOP should be like the average congressional Republican over Trump. Now, if you need any further proof that you want to adopt many of the rules taught to us by Donald Trump, let this one little data point be your guide. If Democrats want Republicans to be more like the old school congressional Republicans, that is reason number one that we need to adopt the style of President Trump and keep it here. For too long, we've had a lot of Republicans, and I'll call you out. I love calling out our own party because it's a party that we can actually make a difference in, right? I've been a registered Republican literally since I was 17 years old. I'm a little older than 17 now, so it's been a while. And when I registered as a Republican, I did it because I believed in conservative values. I believed in less government in people's lives. That's still the top reason. When someone says, why are you Republican? I say less government. I want less government control. I want more free market. I think that's what makes a country great. I want people to feel inspired to do better than their parents did. And I believe these are all big values of the Republican Party. When President Trump came along, he literally came along and saved us from a Republican Party that was being led in large part by Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, who I have to tell you, I think they're probably really nice guys, but they didn't have the backbone to push back. The Democrats were using their rules for radicals. They were using bad language. They were using the isms, racism, sexism, bigotry. They were using all of those adjectives to push down Republicans who didn't want to be identified in that way. I talk about it all the time. President Trump came along with no shame bone and single-handedly showed Republicans how to stand up, fight back, push back for what's right, don't worry about what they call you. And that's the reason why the Republican Party says we need to be more Trump-like. I believe it. Do you? 833-33-GORKA is the number to call. 833-33-GORKA. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. America First continues. Jennifer Horn in for Dr. Sebastian Gorka.